The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us halfway through the week. Sam Darnold is doing his quarterback workout today for the NFL. Today's a big NFL day. There's just a lot going on in the National Football League, even here in March. March Madness gets back into it tomorrow night with the Sweet 16. On today's show, we'll have Jude LaCava, Fox 10 sports director, good friend as always. Jude and I go all the way back to the mid-1980s when he was still doing the radio thing, and I was doing my radio thing in California, and at some point he decided to go to TV, and I ended up replacing him. The rest is history. Mike Marlowe, the new AD at Northern Arizona University, he's going to be here in studio today to talk about the opening of spring football. Whenever a new athletic director comes in, you always have to be a little bit nervous. Mike Marlowe cut his teeth at the University of Oregon and then went to Washington State. So he has Pac-12 blood in him, but he actually started at Montana. And NAU is sitting there in a really interesting spot from my point of view. There's a move afoot where Idaho just went back from being a Division I program. They're going back to FCS. They went from FBS, which is like Division I, to FCS, which means they're going to go back into the Big Sky Conference. They got tired of traveling down to Alabama and losing 80-0 and getting a paycheck for $2.5 million to fund the whole athletic department. That is one model with these smaller programs. The other model is New Mexico State, which says, you know what, we're going to hang in there and play football, and we're going to get our heads kicked in, but we don't care. We're going to keep doing it, even though we're in the whack in basketball, and they're going to stick with it. Would NAU ever consider, and I'm just saying this hypothetically, would they ever consider making the move from FCS to FBS, given their new AD is a Pac-12 guy? And what about Jerome Sowers? He was fired, then he was rehired, and none of this happened under the AD's watch. They open spring football this coming Sunday. So Mike Marlowe, all those things I want to talk to Mike about here in studio. And we'll have Talk to the Lopes today, as we do every Wednesday. Today, Kristen Rohr from the GCU Beach Volleyball Program. They're getting it done there. It's good stuff in Talk to the Lopes we do every week in our partnership with GCU. Let's get you caught up. Some of the things on my mind in the world of sports now, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. You can go online to Sagicor Now right now, guys. And you can get your free quote. You're not going to have to sit there and answer a whole bunch of questions from somebody. You just do it and see if it's something that makes sense for you and your family. You got to protect everything around you. Do it with Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. All right, so this morning I was over at ASU, a guest lecture in an ethics class, and made all the kids stand up. And it was in Peter Madrid's class, who's terrific. Made all the kids stand up and said, how many of you want to work nights, weekends, and holidays? Stay standing. And fortunately, all of them stayed standing. When I teach, or even when I lecture, there's times where people will just sit down automatically, and it's, there's the door, get out of here. You're not going to be involved in this business. You have no business being in this business. So it's fun being over at Arizona State. Last night, I sat through another drubbing. How many different words can I use to describe the Suns? And last night, yeah, I'm watching Blake Griffin. There was a sequence. Eric, did you see any of last night's game? Any of last night's disaster at all? Did you find a way?
I did not. I'm sorry. I didn't see it.
Don't apologize.
I was celebrating my dad's 80th birthday.
That was better than this.
That was not a priority to have the Suns game on, which says a lot because my parents used to be diehard, die-in-the-woods Suns fans, and they don't even watch anymore.
So. There was a play last night, Eric, where Blake Griffin gets the ball at the top of the key. And he up fakes, and there goes Dragan Bender right on by him. And he takes two dribbles, and over comes my guy, or not my guy, your guy's guy, Marquise Chris. And I think it was Alex Len. And he just swooped through both those guys, and he leaned into them, and they fouled him, and he got a layup. He went through three dudes last night on one play. And I wouldn't even describe it as a spectacular basketball play. It was just the anemic response by the Suns. And I get it. They're trying to lose now. It was an impressive loss in that stand. They lost by 27. They could have lost by 30 or 47. Jay Triano said all the right things afterwards. And it looked like there was a gathering of fans there from the way the game was being shot last night. They just keep embarrassing us.
Tuesday night, the Pistons are in town.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Come on.
The Suns are the worst team in the NBA.
The Suns, the Pistons.
The Pistons
coming
are
up
in
next.
Town. It's mid-March. It's a beautiful midnight, mid-March night. Let's go down the arena and watch the Suns.
Devin Booker's not playing. TJ Warren's not playing. And the Suns, can they come back? They're down 25. Let's go to Tom afterwards. Tom Chambers last night was wearing this really cool-looking Suns shirt. And EJ's out there, and there was like, I don't know, the usual 20 fans that want to jump around and be on television after getting their ass kicked again. I hope, look, eventually they have to figure it out, right? They're not going to do it this year. But when I start seeing the Suns may be close to turning it around, or hours and hours of debate, when they do figure it out, if they figure it out, like I really think they have the shot at figuring it out here. They lose enough, they win the lottery, and they get DeAndre Ayton, and you put him alongside of Booker and Jackson, TJ Warren. You can even move TJ if you wanted to, but you suddenly have a nucleus. Instead, it just feels like with the fifth overall pick in the 2018 NBA draft, the Phoenix Suns. We're going to sit here in May and go, wah, wah, wah. And the Suns will take Trae Young, and he'll get hurt. And we're just going to sit here for another, let's tank again. Let's tank again. It just feels like that's what could happen. And for those of you that think that, oh, you should be more supportive. You're a local sports guy. And, oh, you're just sitting there making fun of the Suns. Get over yourself. They're an embarrassment. Absolute, abject embarrassment. They took a once proud friend. This is Mercedes-Benz into a Pinto. Come on. I hear this holier than thou. Oh, well, these guys making fun of the Suns. They're just not on the Suns bandwagon. No. No. This is where, even if they get it turned around, if it comes out is, and the Suns really struggled from 2010 to 2018 to find themselves, and they finally built this dynasty, people just leave it at that. That's 8 years of their lives, of their money, of their revenue, of their time that organization took and put an inferior crap product out on the floor. End of sentence. Trae Young turned pro yesterday, speaking of. I can't see it. I just can't see it. But if we're sitting here and they're outside of the top three, you've got the Euro, you've got Bagley, you've got Ayton. I mean, really, what choice do you have? If they are picking fourth or fifth or sixth, I'm just going to go, oh. Because then it does make sense to take Trae Young.
No, I would take Mo Bamba from Texas.
He turned pro yesterday.
He did. And he is really, really, really good. He's not DeAndre Ayton good.
But Alex Len was really, really, really good coming out of college.
He's really, really good. He's far better than Alex Len.
Thought Marquise Chris was supposed to be the game changer, the world beater.
But Mo Bamba's 7 feet tall with really long arms and a pretty decent shot and a really good rim protector.
But Marquise Chris, man, Keese can jump.
He can.
He can get high. I thought Markieff Morris was – I thought Keefe. When announcers call him Keefe, no, it's Markieff, and he's not here anymore.
At least Morai were somewhat productive during their time here. You can't say the same about Alex Len. And to this point, you can't really even say the same about Marquise Chris. We've seen glimpses, but... And it looks like Dragan Bender is going to be a serviceable NBA player, but you don't want, serviceable NBA players.
I'm watching him last night, and... He's got open look after open look, and it's nice form, clank, paint chipper, glass chipper. I don't know if it's his confidence. That's the other thing, Eric, is...
Serviceable, Brad.
Well, but that's the spot that they're in. It's really hard to gauge anything. Like when people say, look at the great job. Devin Booker scoring all these points. He has nobody around him, so of course he's going to shoot. I mean, of course he's going to go out and shoot a bunch of shots. But anyways... It's just kind of fun to bang on them because they're so bad. And just, you guys have to... Not hold it, not sit there and just flip the script. Oh, they're great. Oh, Brad's on their bandwagon. No, we're going to objectively look at this. The Coyotes play tonight against Buffalo. Speaking of interesting, they've been interesting. They actually have, here's a story for you. Our Coyotes, my hockey team, actually has more points than the team they're playing tonight. When was the last time that happened? The Coyotes have a better record than the Sabres. It's pretty good. And the ton of NFL stuff. So if there's four quarterbacks taken in the first four picks, Sam Darnold is working out right now. The NFL Network cannot get enough of it. They've had Jordan Palmer, his quarterback coach, John Carson's brothers, his quarterback coach. They're out at USC today. But yesterday, Josh Rosen had a private workout with Cleveland. Okay. Baker Mayfield is supposed to work out with Cleveland tomorrow. Then Cleveland is going to go to Wyoming to work out Josh Allen. So Cleveland, who's sitting there with these two top picks, where they have an opportunity to do a whole bunch of stuff, 1 and 4, even though they could trade back to 5. There's just a lot of interesting things going on around the draft. We'll talk about much of that next with Jude LaCava. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona after the Coyotes and Sabres tonight. Stay with us. Want to remind you tonight, Peter King, part of Brad Sussmat Football AZ over on Fox Sports Arizona, that will air before and after the Coyotes game against the Sabres. Peter and I break down. He does not like the Sam Bradford move at all, thought they overpaid. Peter Skyped in with us earlier in the week, and also the possibility of the Cardinals trading all the way up to number two. As Adam Schefter reported, the Cardinals and Buffalo are trying to move up to number two and what the price tag would take. All that with Peter King, also Herm Edwards and his day at Luke Air Force Base, a lot of recruiting news and notes, and we're in Tucson, too, with Kevin Sumlin. That's all tonight. Turn our attention now to what's going on here locally. None better than Jude LaCava to do that. Fox 10 sports director, good friend as well. How are you, first and foremost? I haven't seen you in forever.
Yeah, doing okay, Brad. It's that time of year with spring training and coming off the madness. That's the NCAA tournament, but certainly a lot of intriguing issues around town, to say the least.
Okay, let's start with U of A. Is Sean Miller going to be back in your view, or do you think we get something here in the next week or so that he's gone?
I think the bigger issue is going to be the NCAA and the investigation by the FBI. And I think that's going to be a bigger concern. I think if I'm on the outside looking in, I'm concerned about lack of institutional control when your top assistant, a guy you've been with for 13 years, gets arrested. That's not going away. The basic question there is very simple, Brad, and that is, how much did you know and when did you know it? And it's hard to believe that you wouldn't know it after you brought Book Richardson over from Xavier to Arizona. So I still think that's the bigger elephant in the room. Certainly the exit to Buffalo didn't help his cause. I think it makes it a little bit easier for the Wildcat faithful to say, okay, I get that. That's inexcusable coming off a Pac-12 championship. But he's a fighter, and, you know, he was very clear. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the biggest thing I see with this story is that you can't advance it any faster than it is. And that means, you know, I'm not going to jump to conclusions. I don't have all the information. The FBI does. So we have to kind of wait and see. It may take many months, but it ain't going away. And one of the interesting stories that's out there from the Oregonian is another potential inquiry into Marvin Bagley. So, you know, this is just the beginning of what's going to be a long process. And I would say that Miller's career in Tucson is still very much in question.
Because if you're Dave Hickey, from my view, Jude, it's you can't sit here and wait for all the information to come out for the betterment of the athletic department. He inherited Sean. If we're just talking about on the court, they've never made it to the Final Four under him. He's recruited some very talented players, but they've completely underachieved from what they sell us. Now, Dave Hickey may see that differently, but every year it's a player's program and bear down, and we've got a program with a number one overall rated player. While I agree with you, we don't have all the information. Dave Hickey can't sit and wait. And I find it interesting that on April 12th, they're unveiling a statue of Lute Olson down at the U of A that's being put out there as a time to look at the program and be together as a program, kind of a kumbaya moment. If there was ever a time to do something, and with players being discontent, former players discontent with him, it would seem to me to be in the next couple of weeks.
Well, it's an interesting point you make, but here's the key. The one thing that U of A has to stop doing is writing checks for coaches on their way out the door. Oliver Rodriguez, okay.
Yeah.
Now, there is a provision that a lot of people talk about. You know, you get into this cause, just cause. There's been a lot of erroneous reporting on that. But the fact of the matter is his contract and payout could be challenged, and that is part of Arizona state law and the Board of Regents. And that I've talked to a couple of attorneys that have given me a ruling on that and say, look, if there is a reason to break this contractual agreement, we can do it, and we can do it without a payout. I mean, it would look horrible again if they have to write a check to Sean Miller anywhere from $6 to $10 million. That's been rumored out there. I don't think that has to happen, depending on what the jurisdiction is of a potential termination. So we got to see that. If there's any type of connection to Book Richardson, I think they might be able to say, look, that's it. You violated the contract. That's going to be a very intriguing issue here. But I don't see them making a move. I mean, you bring up a good point, but I think they're going to kind of wait this thing out, and they're going to wait to hear from the FBI.
Jude LaCava with us. And let's switch over then to, could Sean Miller be on Robert Sarver's list? Robert admires him a great deal. Could Robert Sarver look at Sean Miller as the next coach of the Suns? You're very close to Dan Majerle. Would Dan Majerle leave GCU and Jerry? I highly doubt it. But maybe time heals wounds. What's your view on the Suns coach and the future? Is Jay Triano have a shot? A lot of questions there.
Yeah, I think it I don't see Miller making that move. I think that just is not, you know, it would be very tough. It's such a different game. And, you know, should he go the route of Quinn Snyder, get a job as an assistant, and try to salvage his career if he has to go to the NBA? That's a more likely scenario. The name I'm hearing is David Fizdale, the former Memphis Grizzlies coach, that is very much connected to James Jones, who may, in fact, be elevated to a little bit stronger position with the Phoenix Suns in terms of drawing NBA free agents. Of course, he played in Miami and in Cleveland, and is very well connected to the likes of Rich Paul. And I think Sarver sees him as a guy that could be a bit of a recruiter when it comes to notable free agents. So I don't see Dan leaving GCU, Brad, until he gets to the NCAA tournament. He's on a mission.
Yeah.
He's an extremely loyal guy to Jerry Colangelo. But I would keep a name out there in David Fizdale. I think there's some very strong connections to James Jones. I think he's fairly respected. And I would have to say that that name is intriguing to me. Jay Triano, I know he'd like to retool that assistant coaching staff. But this has, again, been a horrific season. I mean, what, 19-53, you know, obviously they're tanking, but not saying they're tanking. It's a tough watch. I mean, we did a little story this past week. They're averaging close to 50 losses a season over the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the NBA should put in a 10-year rule. If you can't make the playoffs in 10 years, you should put the team up for sale. This has been an act of total incompetence. Now, they're positioning themselves for DeAndre Ayton. It would be interesting if there is hope out there, if you want to look at the half glass full.
Sure.
Booker, Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton. Hey, that's not a bad young core. But again, you still have to ask your fan base to wait a year or two, even to get into the conversation of a postseason berth.
May 27th, 2010 was the date of the last playoff game by the Suns. I bring it up over and over and over. And in that 2010 season, they had more victories than the Suns had combined the last 3 years. Just think on that terms of what incompetence in running this thing, not into the ditch, but into the Grand Canyon that Robert has managed to do, yet he's padded his pocket and his investors' pockets in big ways. Let's shoot over to the NFL. So Adam Schefter reported over the weekend the Cardinals are trying to trade up to number two, and that Buffalo is right alongside of them. They're both in the race for a quarterback, and that it's going to go quarterback, 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 top four. I'll get to the moves they made with Bradford and Glennon in a minute. From your point of view, would Steve Keim be willing to mortgage one this year, one next year, twos all over the place, to move all the way up to number two for a quarterback this year?
If he could get away with it and get somebody like Sam Darnold, I think that would be a move he would make. However, I don't see them doing that. I think the fact that they put some money in Bradford and Glennon tells me that if they can't pull that off, they'll be more apt to look at one of the more dark horse quarterbacks, the kid from Richmond, Laletta. Mm-hmm. There's a kid at Virginia, Brian Lefwich, was looking at it as pro day just last week, Bamford. There's a kid that's put all kinds of numbers up at Toledo. More dark horse type candidates, but have a chance to maybe be a starter someday. I happen to think that there are some very intriguing dark horse candidates at the quarterback position, somebody that you might be able to pick up in the third or fourth round. Mm-hmm. So if they can't pull off a deal to move up, Brad, I could definitely see them taking a gander at some of these guys that have performed well, whether it be, you know, the Senior Bowl or in some of their pro days. But I still think that the commodities out there for quarterback on the high end are going to be tough to move up on. I can't see Buffalo just going with A.J. McCarron. I think they want to be aggressive, and they want to try to stay where they are in terms of getting a quarterback. So it's going to be my point is tough to move up right now if you're the Cardinals.
Would you discount Adam Schefter's report? Peter King said that he had not heard that, but he trusts Adam Schefter's reporting.
Well, Adam's a good reporter. I think that there's attempts being made. The question then would be, could they pull it off? I don't think they can pull it off. I think that when they look at the big picture and they've got a couple of veterans where they're at now, I see them taking a little bit different approach to drafting a quarterback, and I think you might see something more as early as the second round. I think they could take a receiver, you know, somebody like Ridley from Alabama, mm-hmm. that would come in and add to what Fitz is at and try to find a franchise receiver to complement Fitz. And, you know, that's a definite need that they got to look at.
It's interesting to me because I see a trend now developing in the NFL. When the Eagles had Sam Bradford, Chase Daniel, and they got Carson Wentz, Denver goes out and gets Case Keenum, and they're trying to trade up to get a quarterback. You know, the Cardinals have Glennon, they have Bradford. To go out and get that third quarterback and try to develop that third quarterback, the way the Eagles went about it, what Minnesota did last year, what Denver did, I see it as a trend. To me, it makes sense to try to move up because I think that draft picks, you can go replace those. It's not like the Cardinals have hit on all their ones every year, so I give Steve credit, and you know the way he pulled off the Chandler Jones deal, he knows how to go out and make big plays. But Tyrann Mathieu leaving, where were you at on Tyrann Mathieu leaving? I was fine with that.
Well, I didn't have a problem. I'm probably in the camp that suggests that after two ACLs, one on each knee, can he be that player again? And you know, granted, you got to give a guy time to heal. Now he's always been a guy that loves the underdog, count me out, and I'll show you type of kid, but I just think that he needed a new environment. I think Buda Baker brings an outstanding skill set. You still have Branch and Bethea back there as very good options. You may want to look at trying to sign a reasonably good slot corner, slot defender. And I don't have a problem with it. I think Honey Badger was really tied to Bruce Arians. Fresh environment, new start. I don't have a problem with it at all. They had to cut the salary. They had to manage the cap. I wish him well. I'd like to see him prove some people wrong. I think his personal story, Brad, is unbelievable when you think about the foster care and the uncle that adopted him and all of the tragedy that he had. Yep. I kind of have a tendency to look at how did he get there and how did he prove people wrong, at least to this point. So let's see what he can do, but can he ever be a legitimate defensive player of the year candidate again? We'll see.
Let you go. A couple other questions. I appreciate your time. Coyotes, have they turned the corner?
You know, I think they have.
Well, they're playing Buffalo tonight. They have a better record than Buffalo. When was the last time the Coyotes had a game where they had a better record than somebody rather than just opening day?
When I look at Keller, when I look at Perlini, they've got a relatively young goaltender in Ranta. Here's the interesting question. Are fans in town more optimistic about the youth movement of the Coyotes or the Suns?
Oh, it's Coyotes.
Right now, I have
it's
to Coyotes. Say the Coyotes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And here's the other part about that that we can validate over the last few weeks. In recent games, the Coyotes are getting a better TV rating than the Phoenix Suns. Think about that for a minute. What was traditionally for 50 years a Suns town. The Coyotes are getting a better TV rating. I think that there's some real interesting dynamics here. They've done a pretty decent job. I think Keller has superstar capabilities. They got a nice young core. If they can get an infusion of money, maybe they can even add a couple of veteran free agents and flip this thing a little faster than most. But I happen to agree with you. I think the Coyotes are a significantly better young core than the Phoenix Suns.
Trust me, I know about the ratings, the lead-in to Brad Sussmat Football AZ. When those mighty Suns are down 40 versus the Coyotes playing a 3-3 game, we see it, you know, just from a business standpoint.
It's a tough watch. It's really a shame. Dreadful. In the 50th anniversary, it's really an embarrassment to see such a great franchise crash and burn like this. I think Robert Sarver should be ashamed of himself.
But he's
had 8 years to figure this out. I do know there's been a couple of interesting groups that have tried to buy the team.
Yep.
He has said adamantly no. How do you ask for a new arena when you've really have this particular image in town of a guy that took a great franchise, and it's now almost close to irrelevant?
Okay, and one last thought on that, and I'll get to one other thing. That's the Diamondbacks. One last thought on that. You know and I know that we're both going to be doing things down at the arena saying Las Vegas and Seattle are interested in the Phoenix Suns. You know it, and I know it. It's going to come. And whether Robert uses it as leverage or not with the city for the new building, both those groups, I was in Vegas 2 weeks ago, they're going to be all over the Suns down here. It's and I think Kansas City, too. It's a matter of time, Jude. Personal opinion. But
well, yeah, listen, I don't think there's any question that he's not beyond threatening a move. Now, I do think that there's just been too much goodwill for five decades over what Jerry Colangelo established. And I would hope that the NBA Board of Governors and the commissioner would quell any thought of that kind of a threat. But it's going to go from bad to worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only interesting dynamic here is, which is very unique because Robert never wanted this, and that is a multi-purpose combining the Coyotes and the Suns in a renovation. I think the irony here is his best bet right now is something he doesn't want to do. And that's something that he doesn't want to do is partner with the Coyotes to say, look, instead of, you know, 41 dates downtown, let's add another 40 dates downtown. And this city is really going to be buzzing over the fall and winter months. And that may be his best play, even though he doesn't financially want it. So there is a way, and I have been told by a few people in town that might be somewhat feasible, that he's going to have to partner up with the Coyotes and say, look, here's one option, and we're going to go multi-purpose. If they can do it in L.A., we can do it here, and let's add more energy and commerce to downtown Phoenix.
Before you get out of here, baseball team, what are your expectations this year?
I think they dial back a little bit, more like 84, 85 wins. I just say that because I think the division's a lot better, and it's very tough to duplicate what they did last year. They didn't make any real dramatic improvements. Now, I think a lot of guys are approaching their prime. Having said that, I think 84, 85 wins could still keep them in the wild card discussion. I think Colorado improved. I think San Diego's pitching prospects are on the come, and they are really going to be good in the next year or two, and the Dodgers are the Dodgers, and let's not write off McCutchen and Longoria for the Giants. So when you look at the big picture, a very tough division top to bottom, maybe 85 gets you in the conversation for a wild card spot, but to me, it's going to be tough to duplicate the 93 wins.
See you down the road. Appreciate the time and the insight, as always.
You got it, Brad. Anytime, buddy.
Take care. It's Jude LaCava.
Take care.
Over at Fox 10. He's not just at Fox 10. He's just a... Here's the thing with Jude. Jude's always working. I admire that in our industry in this day and age. There's not many people that always have a phone to their ear or are wanting to ask the extra question or go to the place where there's not a story today, but there's going to be one 6 weeks, 6 months from now. You don't always have to be standing on a football sideline to find stories here in Phoenix. Mike Marlowe is coming up in about 10 minutes. On the other side, we're going to dive deeper back into the draft, the top four picks, a few other things on my mind here. That's next. And then talk to the Lopes at the top of the hour. I'm Brad Sussmat. So I'm watching Sam Darnold's workout during the break. And also, I tried playing Fortnite yesterday. My son's playing Fortnite, this whole e-gaming thing with what Drake did last week. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, all you have to do is Google eSports, and it's everywhere. So I'm trying to figure out Fortnite, too. But Sam Darnold in the rain, is that appropriate? that he's working out in the rain today over in Southern California. The draft, the way that it is looking right now. So Cleveland and Sam Darnold, it sounds as though, I don't know what could possibly go wrong other than he's in the rain, he slips, grabs his knee, and that's the end of it today. I don't know. They worked out Josh Rosen yesterday, Cleveland did. So they're working everybody out, trying to create that market. That market's not with the number one pick in all likelihood. That market's got to be with the number four pick. The Browns have number one and the Browns have number four. So if the Browns are sitting there and they say at number four, we're in great position that we could take Saquon Barkley, a team may say, you know what, we want to jump up and we want to get that fourth pick. And we'll give you a four, we'll give you the number five pick, in this case, Denver. Denver reportedly this morning is now trying to move from five to four. Well, they'd have to give up something else. The Browns would still be able to get Saquon Barkley. They'd still have the fifth pick in the draft. They could pick up a second, a third. They could pick up all sorts of things from Denver to strengthen their cause. The problem is they're the Browns, right? We don't know what they're going to do. We don't know if they're going to figure it out. You can give these, it's kind of like the Suns. You can give them all the great, talented players, and they'll still stink out loud. Doesn't matter. But let's just say that they're able to do that. And if at number one, it's Cleveland taking a quarterback, and at number two, if the Giants say, you know what, we're ready to get somebody to replace Eli, or we need a lot of things here in New York. So we're going to trade down at number two, whether it's to Arizona or Buffalo or whomever it is. Let's just say it's Buffalo. And Buffalo says, okay, we're going to take Josh Rosen or Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen. Then you have the Jets sitting there at three. It sounds as though, seems as though, if I'm to believe agents and all that, that Josh Rosen is the guy that the Jets are looking at and saying he's the guy for us. That would leave Baker Mayfield, assuming Josh Allen goes number two, or Josh Allen. One of those two would be sitting there, because I do think the people I'm talking to on Josh Rosen, I believe them. I don't believe every agent this time of year. Most of them are lying. So that leaves the fourth pick, and if Cleveland sits there at number four, they take Saquon Barkley. But if you're a team like Denver and you're saying, we want to get in front, we don't want anybody else because I'm John Elway and I love Baker Mayfield, even though they took Paxton Lynch last year, and even though they have Case Keenum now, maybe they go that direction. It's what I talked about earlier with Philadelphia. Look at the model of what the Eagles did. Look at the model of what the Vikings did. Look at the model maybe with Denver if they were to go draft a quarterback that John Elway, that there's now many teams that are looking at, let's get three quarterbacks. Let's get the quarterback that is the rookie. Let's get the quarterback that's the proven veteran. And let's get the quarterback that's somewhat a veteran. I would say the Cardinals had some of that last year, some of it. But Blaine Gabbert and Drew Stanton, to me, were pretty much the same sort of guy. Not in terms of style, but just there was not much there. Now, if one of those two would have been the up-and-comer, the kid that was drafted, that they were bringing along, that's kind of where I think it needs to go. Look, quarterback depth in the NFL, look at games and what teams are starting when they get to around Thanksgiving. And there are not many good quarterbacks left standing. They just aren't. So if the Cardinals sit tight and the rest of the first round, the top picks goes, if Cleveland trades that pick at four, let's just say they move it to Denver, as is being reported today, then Cleveland sits there at five and they take Saquon Barkley. That leaves Indianapolis, which decided to trade down. They have Andrew Luck. Maybe Andrew Luck's back at 100%, and maybe he's not. So do they go on the defensive side of the football in Indianapolis, or do they need some help to help them with their quarterback who they have so much invested in? That takes you to Tampa Bay at seven. They're not going to take a quarterback. They have Jameis Winston. That takes you to eight to Chicago. They're not going to take a quarterback. They have Trubisky. That takes you to nine. That's San Francisco. They're not going to take a quarterback. They have Jimmy Garoppolo. That takes you to 10, Oakland. That's David Carr. That takes you to 11. Possibly at 11. Is Ryan Tannehill really torn it up down there in Miami? Let's say the Giants and Bills flop picks at 12 and 5, or two rather. Then do you think the Giants take a young quarterback there to be the guy that eventually replaces Eli Manning? You go to Washington at 13. Let's talk quarterback. At 14, you have Green Bay. Green Bay has Aaron Rodgers. They traded for Deshaun Kizer, and they have Brett Hundley. And then that leaves your hometown heroes, the Arizona Cardinals, at 15. So there is a space there. There's a big gap where if the expectation is all four of these quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, and 4. I don't know if that's ever happened before in the draft. But if that's what's going to happen, then the Cardinals have to sit there and say, okay, what other direction are we going to go? Do we need to get an offensive lineman? Because we know that Sam Bradford is paper thin. So they draft a tackle, and it's completely underwhelming, and we're sitting here saying, man, the Cardinals keep going back to the offense. Remember, the Cardinals never addressed their offensive line? Well, they addressed the offensive line, D.J. Humphries. D.J. Humphries, they addressed the offensive line with Jonathan Cooper. How did that work out for you? Well, brought Chandler Jones here. D.J. Humphries, how's that worked out for you? So far, has it really worked out? At times, moments, it looks as though he could be the guy. Hasn't happened. He's ready to break through. Easy to say that in March and April to get fans excited. Not proven. Finding a number two wide receiver, that has been something that has been beaten to death over and over and over. So is it Calvin Ridley, the wide receiver at Alabama, that the Cardinals take? And then there'd be the excitement of that. But are you going to keep your quarterback upright? And once again, you're putting off for another year potentially. I'm not the biggest Rudolph guy, but he's out there. There are some other quarterbacks later in the draft. The thing is, I feel as though, and this is on Michael, Michael likes the organization to be in the spotlight. Michael likes the organization to be at top of the heap. Michael likes the buzz around his team. Michael likes to be in the middle of all that. I'm not saying anything's out of school. It's just a fact. You're not going to cause great buzz by rolling Sam Bradford out there because everybody's saying he's going to get hurt. You are going to create great buzz out there if that's what you're looking for. And in this competitive sports market with sponsorship and business side, you have to take that into account. It is finding a way to get one of these quarterbacks. It just is. It's like when Matt Leinart was drafted and it was trying to get the stadium and everybody getting excited and all that stuff. There was a lot of business that went behind the Leinart selection that fizzled out terribly. Mike Marlowe is next, the athletic director, new athletic director at Northern Arizona University. A lot to get to with him, talking NAU, and then talk to the Lopes at the top of the hour. I'm Brad Sussmat. Let's turn our attention now to Northern Arizona University. Mike Marlowe is with us, the athletic director, new in place at NAU. He's in the Valley. We appreciate you coming in studio to chat a little bit about everything NAU related.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thrilled to be down here. The weather was great in Flagstaff this morning as well, so it wasn't the drastic 20 degrees difference that it can be sometimes.
That's great this time of year for sure. Okay, so what brought you? Your background is Pac-12 primarily. Why NAU?
Well, the last 20 years in the Pac-12, certainly, both at the University of Oregon and Washington State, but I got my start in the Big Sky. And I've been fortunate over the years, from Missoula to Eugene and Pullman, to live in great communities with great commitment towards taking those next steps in their athletic program. And I felt the very same thing at NAU and Flagstaff.
College towns.
College town, great vibe, safe place for young people to be, emphasis on academics and really maximizing both the athletic and academic potential of young people. And that's what charges me up.
Yeah, fan excitement, student excitement, right? That's kind of what I get from you in talking off the air, is that fans are a big part of your deal.
Fans, you know, I see how athletics can make a difference in people's lives, young people and adults as well. You know, if people buy into it and become a part of it, it can be exhilarating.
Okay, so you've been on the ground 7 Mondays, borrowing your phrase. And in 7 Mondays, as you look at everything, Mike, what is your big takeaway from NAU right now and the job that you've taken on?
Well, my big takeaway right now is we have a tremendous amount of opportunity to grow, one. And my second one would be the people. And I'm not talking just within the athletic department. I'm talking around campus and the Flagstaff community in the state of Arizona and beyond. The passion towards NAU athletics, Northern Arizona University, and Flagstaff is exciting.
Let's talk football then.
Okay.
So you come in, Jerome Sowers is your coach. He wasn't the coach, then he was the coach, and he is the coach now. And spring football gets started here shortly. What have your dealings with Jerome been? Just talk about football a little bit.
Well, you know, Jerome is somebody that I've been aware of throughout my career. I was just starting out at the University of Montana at 23 years old when he was a defensive coordinator. So I've known of Jerome and known Jerome for a lot of years. And something about Jerome Sowers that I think you recognize in others is he's a teacher at heart. Mm-hmm. He is not interested in just exclusively teaching the X and O's, but teaching about life. So I'm very optimistic about the future of NAU football.
What do you want the schedule to look like for NAU? And when I get that question from fans, yeah, you have your conference games, and we'll get into the conference in a minute, but do you like where it is? Do you want to bump it up in your non-conference? Is it about where you think it should be?
Well, you know, this year is about where I think it should be because I think we can win just about every game on our schedule in the non-conference. However, those years that we do play the Arizona schools, I think, are very important for this state, for our community, and mm-hmm. for the student athletes. An opportunity many of them feel that they were just a hair away from being a Pac-12 player, yeah. or could be a Pac-12 player. So an opportunity to go and improve that is very good for the kids and the fans.
And when you're coming from an environment like Pullman, mm-hmm. let's just go with your most recent stop, and the environment there on a Saturday afternoon or Saturday night, do you see it as about the same? Flagstaff a little bigger than Pullman? Correct me on that.
That's correct. That's right.
So is it more of an event at Flagstaff for NAU than you think even for a Pac-12 environment that you had at Washington State? It could be that.
It absolutely could be that. And I think that's on us as an athletic program, that we've got to engage that community, including our student body, to make sure that they feel not only invited but a part of it.
The landscape of college football. Right now, I look at Idaho coming back within the Big Sky Conference. New Mexico State says, nope, we're going to stick with it. We're not going to go FCS. We're going to stick FBS. This is a tough one, I think, for you to answer today. And I get it if you're like, Brad, I need some time on this one. Or no, this is where we are. Staying in FCS long term, is that the best move for NAU?
Well, you started this this particular topic with change, and I think that's what we have to recognize is college athletics is never completely stable. For where we're at today, for where our program's at today, it's absolutely the right place because we can compete not only for conference championships, but we've proven it in other sports we can compete at the national level from where we're at today. Now, what it's going to look like in 5 or 10 years, that's anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm. Television contracts expire. Mm-hmm. Conferences look at it and say, we just simply can't afford to do football if we're just sticking with football. It's an expensive sport. It's not like it's easy to do across the board, especially at FCS level.
That's exactly right. Now, the one difference for NAU, I think, as an institution is we are growing, unlike a lot of FCS schools. We have 22,000 students on campus in Flagstaff, 31,000 around the state. That would make us the largest university in 34 states around this country. So that is something that we've got to continue to observe and evaluate.
Because you're a couple hours away from the Valley, you're 5 hours away from Los Angeles. The recruiting opportunities are terrific to get kids from California to head up there. And I get that. The other question I get around Northern Arizona is basketball facility. So for years, played in the Dome. Early on, 7 weeks in, do you think that that's the best spot to be, or would you like to see that facility down the road become their own spot?
We're evaluating all of our facilities right now, and we're not in a position to say, hey, how are we going to prioritize them? Our focus is going to be right now in the short term winning at everything that we compete in the Dome. And you can win in basketball in the Dome. I mean, Syracuse has proven that for a lot of years.
No, that's true. And what do you think of the Dome and just the way it's laid out?
I think they've done a very nice job of making it everything it can be right now, and I think we can take other steps in the future.
So order of priority to wrap this up, what are your early order of priorities?
My number one priority is the student athletes. I want to make sure we're doing everything we can to make sure they have a wonderful experience at NAU and Flagstaff. And then number two priority is engaging with our various communities in a meaningful and genuine way.
Good stuff, Mike. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Brad. Appreciate it.
Mike Marlow there with Northern Arizona University. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Of course, our football show, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona. 16 airings per week. We're back with more after this timeout. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics, all sports, all topics. This week, the beach volleyball program. Kristen Rohr is with us, and I must say right off the top, having grown up in Carlsbad and beach volleyball now at GCU, this is awesome, and I love the fact that it's right here in our own backyard. It's a great sport that's growing by leaps and bounds. Coach, it's Brad. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. How are things going this season for the program?
They are going great. We actually just took an overnight flight from Hawaii last night. So I'm still trying to get accustomed to what time zone I'm in. And I'm going on about 3 hours sleep, but excited to be talking to you about our program. We just played Hawaii, USC, and Nebraska this weekend. We competed really well. We lost to Hawaii, who's currently ranked number 3, lost to USC, who's currently ranked number 4. But we were right there with them. We ended up playing Nebraska 3 times this weekend. Usually when we travel a lot, it's just convenient to be able to play multiple teams back-to-back. And we were able to take care of Nebraska every time we played them and had 3 wins out of that. So I was proud of us because it's hard to play the same team 3 times in a row and, keep that mental focus and, them kind of figuring us out and us staying with our game plan. So
you're hanging in there, it sounds like. You didn't dial 9 when you called me, so you're not that tired. I get it. It's fine. It's fine. Kristen Rohr is with us. Talk to the Lopes. Third-year coach with the Lopes. They are ranked 12th in the latest American Volleyball Coaches Association National Ranking. Let's talk about where the program was when you started and where it is now, and if you feel as though that you are on track. The fact that you're ranked would tell me, yeah, Brad, we're where we want to be, but you may look at it and say we're further ahead or a little behind of where I thought we'd be in year 3. What are your thoughts, Coach?
I think that we're right on track. When I came in, we had Kenzie Phelps and Shannon Dugan, who were returning All-Americans. That following year, we ended up having Molly Turner and Tiasha Kotnick become All-Americans. So we're taking the steps to get the athletes in there that we need to be successful. We're into our 3rd weekend of season, and right now we're 7-6. We've only had losses to programs in the top 6, which is promising. We have a couple tough weekends coming up that will really help us see where we are and where we need to get to make our goal, which is being in Gulf Shores in May. And that would mean us being in the top 8, and that would take us beating a top 5 California school.
Mm. And in terms of finding talent, do you go on the club volleyball circuit or is there a club sand volleyball circuit? I've had this question asked of me from parents whose kids want to go do the sand side. Where do you go find your players? How do you go about it?
There are actually a lot of recruiting tournaments for beach volleyball right now, and that side of it is growing a lot. Personally, and I think this is kind of across the board, that absolutely there's those kids that can play both indoor and sand for a university, and we recruit those kids together with our indoor program. But in order to really see what a athlete can bring from a beach volleyball standpoint, we have to see them in the sand. And that's, not going to an indoor club tournament, but to go to actually watch them compete at a tournament in their hometown, or right now there's a lot of tournaments in California. Texas is blowing up. Washington has become a hot spot recently. I'm from Florida, so I like to go back there and see the talent from there. But even Chicago and the schools that you wouldn't really think of, okay, well, where is, how are they going to play beach when it's only warm a couple months out of the year? But there's indoor facilities going up, and there's a lot of recruiting events that go on right now.
How about in-state? Because on the high school level in-state, the AIA has now put sand in, that beach is starting to become more and more, I'll just use it, a thing for high school students. Do you see the growth here in Arizona high schools getting there? Is there work to be done?
Absolutely. It's getting there. I think Arizona has a huge advantage because, not all places have gone that route of getting a high school beach program going. And, California, Arizona, Florida just started last year. But those are really the main places that have high school beach volleyball. And for those athletes to be able to, really compete year round and do that, whether it's in conjunction with club volleyball or in place of club volleyball, It really gives an advantage, and they're getting, you know, so much more training and being able to go compete at that level, not just like playing local tournaments.
Kristen Rohr is with us as we go through the beach volleyball side of things at Grand Canyon University. Talk to the Lopes. Wrapping things up, when you go into a home, how do you go about the recruiting process? What sells GCU versus, as you've pointed out, the Southern California schools that are where you want to be? How do you go about that?
I think that Grand Canyon has so much to offer. I really feel like we are a family, and it's a community feel. It's a beautiful campus. Everything is brand new. We have such great support from the president all the way down to the student body. That was one of the things that sold me on the school when I was looking for a home for myself, and just to see the support that we were receiving from everyone across the board at the school. And you know, at our opening weekend the last couple of years, we've had up to 1,400 fans.
Cool.
And it just kind of shows you where beach volleyball is at our university. We have 150 intramural teams. We just started a club program this year. So it's not just a, you know, like kind of like a side sport. It's very much a followed sport at Grand Canyon.
Good stuff. I appreciate you joining us on short rest and an overnight flight. Good stuff there. Best of luck the rest of the season. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure, there's Kristen Rohr, and that is Talk to the Lopes this week.